Welcome to Ghosts in the Valley. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today we have Doug Sackman on the show. If you like blood, guts, Doug does it all. And he's one of the best special effects artists around. That's why Netflix signed him up for 8 episodes of the newly released Unsolved Mysteries. A little bit about Doug's background. Doug Sackman is an award-winning producer, director, and special effects artist and production designer living in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Doug was originally from Queens, New York. In the last 20 years, Doug Sackman has produced over 45 feature films, as well as many documentary series and reality projects, music videos, and commercials. Most recently, Sackman worked as art director and production coordinator on the Unsolved Mysteries reboot for Netflix, assistant shop gang boss, and set dresser for the AMC series Dispatches from Elsewhere, as well as special effects supervisor and co-producer for Troma Entertainment latest film Hashtag Shakespeare's Shitstorm, an adaptation of The Tempest directed by Lloyd Kaufman, creator of Toxic Avenger. Doug Sackman also directed the latest music video for death metal band Cannibal Corpse, Red Before Black, and will be directing 2 more videos for the band this year. And I will have in the show notes where you can look at Doug's work on his website, DougSackman.com, and also the links to Cannibal Corpse music video, and also a link to ShakespeareShitstorm.com. Here is my interview with Doug Sackman, Episode 4, on the Berkshire's UFO. Thank you, Doug, for being on the show today. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, I was going through your credits. I've seen you have quite an impressive resume with over 40 feature films you were involved with.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth between television, music videos, and feature films. I've actually produced over 45 feature films. I don't know if you looked at my IMDb or my website, but a lot of the stuff I have done isn't up there as well. You know, it's just more of my, I guess, more mainstream stuff or more recognizable stuff, I guess.
Right. I've seen the feature films and TV and music videos, short films, commercials. I mean, almost with all of it.
Well, I've been in the business for 20 years and, it's the entertainment industry has always fascinated me. And then also, you know, I have a special interest in horror and sci-fi and supernatural and aliens and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, for it to culminate in working on Unsolved Mysteries after 20 years of production was pretty incredible, because I grew up watching the show, huge fan of, you know, the original. I jumped at the opportunity when they called me for this. It was kind of, you know, just by working on other things, I got recommended for it as art director, because one of my friends was directing one of the episodes, actually, just happened to be, and they liked what I was doing so much, so they just kept me on for the whole series.
Yeah, so you're quite experienced on the special effects also.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of go back and forth between my two main, my passion is just making movies and you know, film projects in general, but special effects is definitely, special effects and production design are the two, artful. Yeah, I get my hands dirty and I can do more stuff with and be more creative with that, those elements of it. But I do direct and produce and, you know, kind of put together projects from scratch. So a little bit of everything. I just love the art of, you know, putting together projects like this, you know.
They're about 30 years ago. I had my own video production company and I did a couple short films, and I know the work involved in putting all that together yourself, you know. So I was casting director, you know, the whole nine yards. And I had a friend of mine that was into special effects, and I never really got into that. I ended up that side of it until I seen there was a part they were working on. I don't know, you maybe can help me out on this. There was a scene and there was a nudity, and for them to take it down a rating, they brought in a synthetic breast, you know? It looked real. I mean, if you looked at because they did it from the face down to the stomach. If you looked at the person and it looked at the synthetic person they made, it was, and they brought it down a rating because it wasn't the actual body.
I don't know. Well, I mean, the if you're trying to get a rating, you know, the ratings board is just totally out of whack. The standards are more, you know, if you, you know, it's a studio movie or you're putting money behind it, and you know, the standards get totally out of whack. You know, like, for instance, I work for Troma Entertainment, which is probably the oldest independent movie studio in the world at this point, 46 years. You know, worked outside of the studio system. They created the Toxic Avenger, Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD, Class of Nukem High. And, you know, I got my career, you know, I started as an actor in 1997, 1998, and worked on one of their movies, actually the fourth Toxic Avenger movie, Citizen Toxie, as an actor. And that was where I kind of saw you could get more involved behind the scenes, because I had worked on some bigger budget stuff as, you know, a featured background or, you know, TV show stuff here and there. But when I got involved with Troma, you know, I actually got involved with the special effects. I got involved with the production of the thing. And by the end of it, well, you know, I kind of just came on as an apprentice. I ended up getting a associate producer credit on it. And you know, I'm working with them currently to this day. I just co-produced their last movie called Shakespeare Shitstorm, hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm. And that actually comes out this Friday.
Awesome.
It's a adaptation of Shakespeare's The Tempest and a follow-up to Tromeo and Juliet, which Troma released in 1996. So it's, you know, Shakespeare the way it was intended through the eyes of the Troma team and Lloyd Kaufman. If you know Troma, you'll know what that means, I guess. Yeah. ShakespeareShitstorm.com is the website, and we're going to be doing drive-ins across the nation over the next month and a half, 2 months. The world premieres at the Fantasia Film Festival this Friday, and it's virtual. It's the biggest sci-fi and horror film festival in North America. But due to COVID, it's all online. So anyone in the United States and Canada can watch it. If you go to ShakespeareShitstorm.com or Troma.com or Fantasia Film Festival, you type into Google, it'll come up. It's all over. There's a lot of articles and links to the tickets. And you can buy tickets. I think they're, you know, $20 or something. And you can see the world premiere from the comfort of your own home. So,
wow, Fantasia. That takes me back a bit. That was a very good movie. I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, well, this festival's been around for, I think, 30 years. I mean, Fantasia, the movie, has been around for 45, longer than that. And actually, I'm a huge fan of that movie. It's probably where they got the inspiration for the name, but this is just, you know, a festival of hundreds of genre movies over a month. That actually started like a week or so ago. So it's going to be going through middle of September. So those guys are really good. We've been showing a lot of movies there for years. So I would definitely check that out. FantasiaFilmFestival.com, I think, is the website.
Oh, for sure. Do you find out that working with music videos is just as difficult as a feature film?
Definitely not. I mean, sometimes it is, depending on the, you know, the technical stuff you're trying to do with it, but it's much shorter. A feature film, you know, is a dedication of 3 to 6 months, if not longer, depending on, you know, what, how involved you are with it, or, you know, how much money the thing has and how long you can work on it. But music videos, usually it's a 3 to 5 day shoot would be the maximum I've ever done a music video. Usually it's 1 or 2 days, you know, but you put a lot of time and production into those few days to make it look as good as a feature film, but it's only 3 to 5 minutes long, whereas a feature film is an hour and a half. So, you know, not to say I worked on a music video where it was 1 day of shooting and it took us almost a year of post-production because everything was completely composited together and it was all done, you know, by myself and a few friends that, you know, weren't working on it full time. It was kind of spare time over a year, compositing it all together. And that one's actually called The AKA's Get It Together. You can see that on my YouTube page, Doug Sackman on YouTube and all social media, basically S-A-K-M-A-N-N.
Like, you're working on a music video. Is that like, it's just everything like special effects, or is it directing?
Usually on music videos, I get hired to either produce and do special effects or direct. So I directed the last music video for Cannibal Corpse, which I did the special effects. I shot it. I was in it, produced it. This music video for the AKAs, I directed. That was quite a number of years ago, but it was you know, one of the more technical things I worked on. I directed that and produced it and co-edited it with my friend David Poplow. And then I produced a series of music videos for Motion City Soundtrack. And this music video called True Romance was something that, you know, the concept was brought to me by our friends at Dead Horse Films. And they hired me and my friends because they couldn't figure out, you know, the logistics of how to do it. We had to join forces because it's one 4.5 minute shot. It's all done in one shot, but it's all in reverse. So the actors are acting backwards, and it takes place over two city blocks, and it's a very technical thing. So, you know, something, you know, because it was a low budget thing and we're all kind of just trying to make it happen. It was like a week and a half, 2 weeks to do that video, but only one day, one rehearsal day and one shoot day, you know? So it really depends on the situation, you know? Obviously money is a huge factor in a lot of this stuff, but I mean, a lot of, you know, it's more passion too. You have to be passionate about what you're doing to really, you know, find a way to make it work, you know? And I work with a lot of different people on a lot of different projects, and I see, you know, different levels of passion. Sometimes it's more about the money. It's more about making, just being involved with something like that, you know, not really even about what you're making. For me, it's, you know, all about what's going on the screen and what's going into making that happen, you know, no matter what it takes. Obviously, you know, you got to make sure people are compensated and you know, treated fairly and all that kind of stuff. But you also want to make sure you're getting the best thing possible with whatever resources you have, you know.
We'll be right back with Doug talking about his experience on Berkshire's UFO.
Nerd with a Phone 1 here, otherwise known as Charles, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. But I also host a podcast called Nerd with a Phone Podcast, and the number one question any podcaster gets: what is your podcast about? Well, I cover entertainment, news, music, video games, television, comic books, and other hobbies. We say get nerdified. What does it mean? It means we get happy. All right, check out Nerd with a Phone Podcast on IndieBlastNetwork.com.
You know, now getting up to the Unsolved Mysteries that was just released through Netflix, the Berkshire's UFO. It had to be exciting to work alongside the originals, like, you know, Terry Dunn and Robert Wise.
I mean, yeah, it really was incredible. It was something that, you know, 12-year-old me, or, you know, even 9, 10-year-old me would never imagined, you know, watching that show back then, that I'm going to be, you know, literally working alongside these people. You know, Bob, you know, Robert Weiss directed some of the parts of the episodes, and I worked with him to recreate, you know, even stuff for that first episode there, The Mystery on the Rooftop. And it was, you know, it was incredible. It was life-changing in a way too, because I've been doing a lot of different true crime stuff and supernatural stuff and reality TV for years, but even just working with them, you know, them being in the industry for 35, 40 years themselves, yeah, I learned so much from them.
Right. And, you know, when they started out, it was so much different. You know, they're going back before, you know, about the same time I was doing it, you know. So things have changed so much over the years, even with the special effects and what you can do even today on your cell phone you couldn't do back on, you know, professional equipment back when I was doing it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's time to get into the alien part of it yet, but if you leave the line of thinking, obviously not from just the Unsolved Mysteries episode, but, you know, if you follow, you know, UFO stories and what is, you know, a version of the truth or a story, you know, who knows, but, you know, a lot of the technological advances that we have in filmmaking might come from some sort of alien technology. You never know, you know?
Right. I mean, with the years I've been doing this, you know, and following UFOs, and I was really never into UFOs until like 1998, really. I mean, cause, I had paranormal experiences with ghosts and spirits, but not, I didn't relate the two, you know, and what I've been finding out through all these different stories from a Project Blue Book, I mean, with, that happened in my county, you know, and the experiences I know from that, and they all had the same similarity when I was watching the Berkshires, you know, that this craft didn't make any sound, you know. And after interviewing Tom Warner and Tom Reed and Melanie so far, you know, they were all gracious on giving me their time and their experience of that, what happened, you know. And some of these relate back to earlier episodes I've done on past UFO activity. Did you feel anything like that could have happened? Or,
well, I mean, you know, certainly I go into this stuff with open eyes. I worked on a lot of ghost hunting stuff in the past before I really was even involved with UFO. I mean, I've been a fan of, you know, shows like Sightings and Unsolved Mysteries and a lot of these older haunted history shows. And then I got to work on some of the more recent stuff, like the ghost stuff with the Ghost Adventures crew and this kind of stuff. You know, I went in with open eyes and hung out in like the 12 most haunted places in America. You know, I was open to those experiences, and I personally didn't feel anything. I tried, and, you know, I had an open mind to it. Not to say that there's nothing there, but I feel the same way about ghosts and aliens, that I don't not believe. So, you know, obviously the possibility exists and I'm open to it, but until I see concrete proof, I'm not fully going to believe in it. You know, it's more of, you know,
I think that's true with everybody, you know, unless you see it, unless something happens to you.
But I feel like, I mean, not just ghosts and aliens aside, there are a lot of people making blind decisions just on, you know, dumb feelings or religion. If you had to say, do you believe in ghosts or aliens more? I would definitely say aliens, you know, I especially working on Unsolved Mysteries and meeting some of these people and hearing their stories face to face and then having to recreate them. So I did all of the recreations of the stories. So I had to talk to some of these people to really, okay, when you came down from the craft, how did you come down, or what was the beam like, or what angle did it come in on? So I got to ask really technical questions of these people, and they could, you know, answer them as if it actually did happen to them, you know? So, and, you know, I heard their stories and was there for some of the interviews and the pre-interviews and this kind of stuff. It definitely made me more of a believer, you know, being on the site of where these things actually happen. You know, there's actually a park up in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, where, and the bridge is still there, where Tom Reed has had his experience, you know, and it's also recognized as an actual event. You know, he's got accreditation that says that it is an off-world event actually happened here. And the Navy and the military are saying that there are these things that we don't know what they are. So it's, you know, again, if you follow, you know, the line of alien stuff, we could be leaning more towards disclosure, or it could be a distraction to just keep us, you know, our mind off of what else is going on.
What was your part in that episode?
Of the UFO episode?
Yes.
Well, I was the art director, so I handled all of the recreation. So with the producers and the lighting team and the camera team, you know, we worked to recreate their experiences as best as we could, in a, you know, a way that's not showing anything too much, because we don't know what actually they saw, you know? So there was this line of showing, you know, what happened on the ground. You know, we had conversations about, you know, because there's more to those stories. And if you follow them up, I'm sure you have, and you've talked to them. Mm-hmm. All of those people have much more to those stories. But Unsolved Mysteries is a show that's kind of more based in reality. And the UFO stuff is a little bit more, obviously, out of this world. I mean, it's not that it's not based in reality, but it's definitely different than a murder or a missing person. I mean, sometimes the missing person is tied into the UFO abduction, like the case of Travis Walton, you know, and Fire in the Sky and that kind of stuff. But with the producer of Unsolved Mysteries, they wanted to lean towards what was the more believable part of the story. You know, obviously they talk about going up onto the crafts and stuff. And I was initially tasked with, we were going to be creating the interiors of these crafts and actually creating some beings and this kind of stuff. And that got all nixed pretty early on, because it was started to go into the more unbelievable aspects of the story, which is obviously a part of it. You know, these people have stories that they were abducted and they did witness UFOs. But I think in the case of Unsolved Mysteries, they didn't get into what happened on the ship so much, or, you know, kept it in a way, all the stories kind of lined up in a way that, if you watch it, you know, a lot of this, the Unsolved Mysteries episodes we did, and, you know, I think kind of just as a formula for them, it progresses from in the UFO story to what happened, people seeing it on the ground and seeing lights. And then it started getting to people who actually had the experiences of contact and being abducted and pulled up into the ships. And then it also had the experience of people who wanted to see it and had heard about it and were alive back then, but they didn't see anything, you know? So it's opening it up to all sides of the story, all sides of the spectrum, without casting doubt on any one of those people, you know? And
yeah.
I think that's why Unsolved Mysteries has been able to you know, cover a lot of these stories too, is because they show respect to the families and the people telling the stories. They're not saying any one side of the story is wrong. They're just presenting facts as they are told in the best and most honest way possible, I guess.
I think that kind of shocked a lot of people, that episode being put in that 6-part series, you know, the UFO part, because it wasn't really, I don't know how to put it, like a unsolved mysteries type of true crime mystery.
Well, I mean, technically, I mean, it's not in that aspect, but if Unsolved Mysteries, if you go back to the older episodes, they had a lot of UFO stuff in there and some ghost stuff. They cut unsolved in case of everything. They were across the board. It wasn't just like cops or America's Most Wanted or something like that. This is, you know, weird stuff that happened. And, you know, I mean, in this first 6 episodes alone, get into the Freemasons, get into UFOs, get into, you know, stuff with, the government. Actually, that's stuff that's actually in the next 6 episodes. Yeah, I worked on 4 episodes of this part, and I worked on 4 episodes of the next part. Some of the episodes were supposed to come out first, and you think got switched around, and that actually has something to do with, you know, evidence and you know, more of the story coming out or being told. And that's also through the research of Unsolved Mysteries. Like, while we were doing these stories, you know, we got access to phone records and things that might have been locked before that opened evidence in cases. So some of these cases have a very good likelihood of being solved once they come out.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Doug Sackman.
Imagine going to a website or walking into a retail store and everything you see is only $1. Impossible, right? Well, you might think so. But Dollar Tree will prove you wrong. Dollar Tree is the nation's number one destination for value shopping. All of their stores are well-lit and crammed with all kinds of hidden treasures. Dollar Tree offers a plethora of merchandise that includes many national and regionally trusted brands. It doesn't matter if you're looking for housewares, dinnerware, candy, snacks, stationery, or holiday needs. You're going to find it at Dollar Tree. You can shop at your hometown store or shop online for exclusive offers, manufacture closeouts, watch videos, and join their Value Seekers Club. On top of all that, you can have your order shipped for free directly to your local store. To visit DollarTree.com, click on the link in the show notes to let them know we sent you. Doing so helps keep our podcast going. Dollar Tree, where everything is only $1.
I've had, you know, going on different sites like Facebook and Twitter and putting out there if anybody has any information on this. I was surprised. I got like so far like 7 emails already from people. They don't want to come on and talk. You know, they still don't want to give their name. It's their experience that happened that night on September 1st and also that summer that led up to that. You know, there's a lot of activity in that area. And I was surprised on the people that contacted me on their experiences. And some of them left messages at the police department that weren't recorded or, you know, put on record. They were basically called crazy. So, you know, they came forward, you know, they come forward. And I imagine there's going to be more come forward since these Tom Reed and Tom Warner and the others came forward with their stories, you know, so they might come forward with theirs.
Yeah, well, that was the thing that actually held up. The first set of Unsolved Mysteries episode was supposed to come out earlier in the year, but they were still working out the system with Netflix on how they were going to handle all of the calls and things that were coming through the website, because things are different. Like back then, you know, the Unsolved Mysteries producers could field some of this evidence and be a little bit more involved with it. But now, you know, the way that the media is and the way that everything is, they have to pass this stuff off to the authorities as soon as possible if they get any solid leads. But they also can't be just passing off anyone that comes to them. So there is some kind of vetting that has to be done of the credibility of these stories and, you know, people just not coming in to, you know, say something because they heard it, you know, and they want to be a part of the story now, you know. So not to say, I think Unsolved Mysteries and the crew there have been doing it for so long, they know how to tell if someone, you know, they have steps that they take to make some of these stories more credible, you know?
Right. Are you surprised by the attention that this new series of Unsolved Mysteries is getting? I mean, what I hear is one of the most watched series on Netflix this summer.
Yeah, I mean, it's was number one the first few weeks that it came out. I'm not sure where it is now, but it's definitely up there in the, you know, the most watched. I think, you know, Unsolved Mysteries is the original true crime show, you know, and there's so much, the world is just obsessed with true crime. There's like many podcasts and, you know, every network has their own version of a true crime show. And So, of course, when Unsolved Mysteries comes back, everyone that's been following all this other true crime is going to jump onto that and want to check that out, too. So I think that's a big part of the appeal. But then also, they just did an amazing job with it. You know, they really, you know, the entire team, a lot of people involved with the show. And I know for the UFO episode, it was 5 years of research to put together that particular story. You know, it might have been a broader thing of UFOs to begin with, or more about the, you know, the summer of that area, you know, but then they pinpointed these stories and these individuals with the, you know, the credibility and witnesses and people to back up and this kind of stuff to narrow it down to one specific day.
Right. After talking with Tom Reed, you know, he was telling me about the years he had into that, you know, before the episode. And I think they're all very excited about being part of it. But they all also shared the same, I don't say dislikes, you know, they didn't put everything in their, you know, part of their scene, or like, you know, the crew might've been at their house for 8 hours and they left a lot out that they thought could have been. But with that being said, they know it, you know, sometimes it's all the hands of the director.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've actually have talked to some of the subjects after the fact, you know, after the show has come out, and, you know, they have expressed that to me. And I know they've, you know, probably expressed that to some of the producers as well. And it's something that, you know, every one of those people have a very long and intense story. And it's not just that night either, you know, so we can't put all of that stuff in. It's a documentary series, I guess, you know, so it's got to be sort of fair and balanced and couldn't lean too towards one story or the other. You know, I think it was just, they're just trying to share the facts that tie all those stories together in a timeline that makes sense, you know? Mm. I know exactly what you mean, though. You know, I'm a part of films and TV shows and music videos, and there's tons of stuff that always gets left in the cutting room floor, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
One thing that Unsolved Mysteries did do, though, is they did release a bunch of stuff that did end up on the cutting room floor. If you go to just type Unsolved Mysteries additional evidence, it's a thing on Reddit that, you know, there's an Unsolved Mysteries thing on Reddit there. You can put evidence, I think, and then there's a specific thread that has a Google document link that has scenes from every single one of the 6 episodes that were cut out for time, or it wasn't as relevant to the story as possible. Like for the UFO one, there's something about some cattle mutilations that we were actually going to be doing a reenactment for, and they ended up, you know, deciding they weren't going to use that part of it. So we didn't do the reenactment, but, you know, I had talked to the person about what they had found, and I was set to make some cows that were turned inside out, essentially made to look like bubble gum, you know, and all the blood was drained out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is on the Google document in an edited version, but, you know, it's there, you know, it is the additional evidence. There's stuff for the, you know, the Ray Rivera case. And I mean, all of them, you know, there's additional stuff for, you know, and then there's also kind of the key points of evidence in each of the episodes or in those folders. So, for the new term, I guess, armchair detectives, people at home who want to follow through, they, you know, it's kind of a crib sheet for, okay, these are all the things that were weird about what happened in these episodes, and these are all the points that there could have been a witness or someone could have more information. And then, you know, that's kind of where, you know, for people who are trying to solve this at home or might have more information, they can go on and say, hey, oh, I was involved with this, or this, you know, this picture, I know this person, or I know this car, or whatever it is, you know?
Right. Well, Doug, I want to thank you for being on the show today and giving me some of your time. I know you're busy.
Yeah, my main website is just DougSackman.com, DougSackmann. I'm on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, all under the same name. And you can see my most recent projects this week. I don't know when this is coming out, but Friday the 29th is the premiere of hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm from the Troma team at Fantasia. And then I also have another movie I did special effects for called Goodbye Honey. Just really cool fire effects, you know, burning people and this kind of stuff. And that's at the Dances with Films LA Film Festival, which is also a virtual festival. So between 9:30 p.m. and 3:30 a.m., you have 3 or 4 chances to watch both those movies, like, live with audiences online, which are pretty interesting to see. Will be my first virtual festival experiences, I guess. So for those who, and then one more, if I get more plug in there, The Honeymoon Phase, another movie I worked on, just came out on iTunes and Amazon Prime and all that kind of stuff. It's a psychological horror movie about the first 6 months of being married in a futuristic setting, I guess. The first 6 months of a relationship.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
All right. Thank you so much.
I would like to thank Doug Sackman for his time and sharing his experiences on the set of Berkshire's UFO. There will be 8 episodes total. And next week will be episode number 5 with Justin Janowitz, director of photography for Berkshire's UFO. Please go to Apple Podcast and rate, review, and subscribe to Ghost in the Valley. Doug Sackman's links will be posted in the show notes. He is one of the best art directors in the industry. Doug Sackman, thank you very much. We'll see you next week with another great episode with Justin Janowitz. I'm Ghost in the Valley.
Podcast Network.